You're listening to Face Off, episode 25, recorded July 11th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we'd like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com or follow us via Twitter by going to twitter.com/faceoffshow.
Well, Jade, how was your weekend?
It's good.
How's your week, actually? I haven't seen you in a week.
Yeah, it's been pretty busy, actually, trying to keep things rolling. How about yourself?
Yep, just doing a little bit of programming, trying to better myself, get into some frameworks, you know, get a little bit away from the PHP.
Yeah. You and I actually
been experiment with some different stuff.
So. Yeah. You and I have been working on some stuff that we're going to talk about in the show in the future that I'm really excited about. It's been a while. I mean, Rails got me kind of excited, but this what we're working with right now, which is called Sinatra, just clicked immediately with me. And I can't wait to talk about it on the show, but not this week.
Yeah. It seems like a very good stepping point between Rails.
Yeah. So. But this week, we kind of have a themed show. What we kind of want to talk about is a pretty generic topic called target market. You know, your target market. So let's get into it. Our web apps are actually very much related to our topic. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about the topics later and refer back to our web apps. But for now, I mean, the web apps themselves stand alone. So let's dig into it. The first one we want to look at is the Google Keyword Tool.
So the Google Keyword Tool is obviously a tool from Google that helps you get keywords. So you type in a keyword, and then you hit Get Keyword Ideas, and then it displays a lot of keywords. So what it's going to display is it's going to display a lot of information about the keywords. One, it's going to be display the advertising competition. So this is going to be relevant if you're going to do advertising on there, or this kind of tells you how saturated the market is a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Of how, you know, the competition of that particular keyword.
Yeah, I mean, I could do a Google. The example I'm using is I search for video games, right? And I could just do a Google search for video games and see what's out there. But what's great about this is it gives you other related keywords that I could search for, or I can just look and see kind of the number of results or searches for those various keywords related to the keyword that I put in anyways.
Mm-hmm. Now, you can put either a URL to where it'll actually pull all your words, kind of tally them up, find out the keywords.
That's really cool. You can ship it off to your site, and it kind of scrapes it and aggregates it and kind of tells you what keywords. I don't think it doesn't look at the address and see what keywords people are using to get to it, but it looks at it.
Actually, there's a checkbox here, and you can include other pages of the site linked from this URL.
Oh, man.
And so what this is going to be useful for a blogger or somebody that's got a website, is if they're going to make a title up for a post that they're writing, you can copy in and paste the content, you know, put it here, hit Get Keyword Ideas, and it'll actually suggest keywords based on the content that you have or that you provided it. Mm-hmm. And then, so once you get a populated list of keywords, we can search by how much search volume they're getting. So we might want to tweak a keyword. Either we might want to find a keyword that has more people. We might want to find a keyword that has less people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you have less competition in the search rankings, you can get higher up.
Yeah, you could find a niche and stick with that. Or you can, you know, just see what, you know, how saturated it is relative to other keywords as well.
If you turn on synonym searching, it'll group keywords based on the similar group of keywords, but in the same category.
Oh, cool.
So I just put in, you know, my URL for NixTutor, and I'm getting Linux server, and then there's six related keywords to Linux server, that category. Then we've got email server, and then there's, you know, keywords based on that. So I can click on one of those groups and then, you know, browse keywords that way as well.
Yeah. I mean, this is really cool. I did video games because I run Montana Fragfest, and, you know, it's like, it's amazing. I mean, I find that I'm not a very good Googler. Sometimes when I'm trying to solve a problem, I'll look and look and look, and I can't do it. And I know a couple people, you know, you and a couple guys I work with who are just amazing searchers. They find they think of the keyword that everyone else is thinking of. So I'm really bad at thinking about this anyways. You know, to me, someone is going to, everyone else thinks the same way I do, even though that's obviously not the case at all. So I'll be like, man, I've been trying really hard to find a web app that does this, and I can't find it. And then, you know, the next day, one of those guys I know will be like, oh, here, I found this, you know, by just tweaking the keywords a little bit that I never even would have thought of doing at all. You know, it's just straight beyond me.
Mm-hmm. So we kind of talked about, you know, how you could use this to make like a blog title, you know, more interest, you know, more related to the keywords that's in there, maybe to get a better ranking or something. You could also use this to, you know, throw in a list of keywords and then get ideas for a post, or maybe an idea, a niche market that you'd never thought of that's related to your category. And one of the ways you can do that is you can, they have export to text and CSV. So you could put it in a bunch of different categories and start making a master list or something.
Yeah, that's really great.
Okay, and then they also have a tool that is very, very similar, and I'm not quite sure the difference because it looks kind of the same. Other than this fact is, and this tool is called the search-based keyword tool. Mm-hmm. It works the same way. You can put a word, phrase, or URL, and you can filter and browse different categories. But the one difference between it is you can actually click this little magnifying glass here, and it will take you to the trends. So you can see how if it's getting more, that search term is decreasing in popularity or increasing.
That's great. Google Trends is awesome. I love Google Trends.
So that's why I wanted to mention this. I mean, to me, it looks exactly the same. That it provides the same data. It just says, the monthly searches, the advertising competition. But that it does have that one difference that you can actually look at trends.
This is funny. So, you know, I did a little bit of it on jaderobbins.com, and I did business. And so one of them was called home business. And so I looked at the Google search trends for that. And, you know, the first regional interest for home trends or for home business is obviously the United States. And the second is Nigeria, which really scares me because wow. I don't know. I can only think of one or two home businesses that I know about in Nigeria, and they're not good for the internet. Didn't you hear you can start a bank in Nigeria?
Can you?
It takes like, you know, and then you just, you know, you can talk to all kinds of people and, you know, transfer money for princes.
Some of the cool things you can do with this search insight is, you know, it tells you the regions. Like you were saying, Nigeria, it shows like a little map of the population of that. It shows rising search related keywords. So if it's something that's starting to become a hot topic, you might find a niche that's starting to take off that you might not have seen before. Mm-hmm. So this is all kind of helps you get it, you know, helps you narrow down your target market. It helps you kind of see what niches that you might be missing out on and things like that.
Yeah, it's funny. You almost mispronounced it, but I always thought it was niche, but it actually can be pronounced both ways, I believe. It's funny because I always thought niche sounds so...
I'm always one of those guys that'll pronounce... If there's two or three ways to pronounce it, I'll do them all the different ways, exactly. Like creek and crick and roof and roof. I'll just interchange them all the
GIF,
time.
GIF, GIF, PNG, ping, you know? Yeah.
But if I'm saying something wrong, I do like to try to correct myself.
I'm actually checking WordNik right now to make sure that both are true web app pronunciations.
So that about does it. It's very simple. Everything, I mean, a lot of the web apps that Google does are simple to and easy to use. Mm-hmm. This kind of fits into the Google web tools. It's kind of similar to that. You know, you want to know who, what people are searching on your website and things like that.
Yeah. This Google, search based keyword tool. It also has, some advertising information, I'm assuming. So there's a suggested bid column. Do you know what that's about? I'm curious. Is that
well, Google's ads are based off auctions, okay. Basically. If you want to pay more to get your ad higher up, you can do that.
Okay, so I mean, this is kind of say the base price of what it would cost me to put an AdWords advertising campaign with that search term.
Yeah, you know, so I mean, like
a minimum at
if
least.
It's, yeah, so like let's say there's not very many search the volume for that keyword search is very low. Mm-hmm. You might only have to pay 25 cents to put your ad there. if it's something very popular, and there's already like 15 advertisers for that page, you might have to pay over a dollar or more.
I see. So I see. That's cool.
That's how that works.
Interesting.
There's also, okay, so there's one more app, which is the Google Custom Search. We've talked about that and adding that to our blogs. There's a way to check what people are searching for on through that on your blog. So if you have it on your blog or website, a lot, I mean, Google is very good at search, and a lot of people have this custom search on their site. But it's useful to, you know, check out what people are searching for on your own site. So if it's something that you don't have, you can add, or if it's something people are having a hard time finding, you might want to make it easier, you know.
It's really cool too, because, with my Google custom search for jaderobbins.com, it not only searches my content at jaderobbins.com, but I also pointed it to aggregate at Montana Fragfest articles that I have authored. It also searches Face Off and any other my other little projects I added to that, where I know specifically that I'm a part of or creating the content for that, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So check it out. I mean, I was surprised at how amazingly easy it was to insert Google Custom Search into your website. It's like you in WordPress, I created an empty page and pasted Google's code in there, and it just, you know, grabbed my style. You know, if you have a good style sheet with, like, you know, good definitions of just the basic HTML stuff like H1, H2, you know, all that, and it grabbed it and it just themed and looked, just works great with my website. It was really easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty easy to install, so. The next web app we got is, you know, kind of similar to the Google search terms, but it's more of a competitors kind of see what other URLs are doing. So compete.com, it's pretty simple. All you do is you got three boxes, you fill in three URLs, and you go ahead and hit compare, and it's going to give you the unique visitors per month on that site. And it kind of gives you a little trend of, you know, if that URL has been increasing in views or is on the steady decline. And it also gives you an aggregation of various terms, you know, how are people getting to your competitor sites? Are they using, you know, mainly Google searched or keywords? Mm-hmm. Are they getting, you know, referral sites? Are they coming through like a social media, like a Facebook or Twitter?
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, we all have analytics like Google Analytics or ClickTales or what's the other one you were using for a while there? Woopra, but that's what's happening at your site. This is a way to get, I mean, it's not as detailed as analytics that you install on your own site, but it's a good way to see what's happening in other people's websites. Like I put in, you know, jaderobbins.com, marksandbar.net, and davidwalsh.name, and it's, unfortunately, there's not enough data for jaderobbins.com. There's not enough visits, which is a downside of this app, is that if you have low visits, you can't see what your competitors are doing. You kind of have to be established in the market already. But you can also just compare your competitors that are big in the market, and you don't have to really include yourself to compare them. You can at least see what they're doing.
Yeah, or if you're just curious on, hey, what do you think this guy gets for traffic? What do I have to, get in order to get... You know what to establish his community. If you're looking at somebody else's, your competitor, and you're seeing their community, and you're saying, "How do I get my blog? What do I have to do? How many visitors do I have to get in order to make my community look like something like that?"
Yeah.
You know, is it 50,000 a month? Is it 20,000 a month?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, you can put it in here, and it'll kind of give you an accurate picture of what you're going to need. I mean, it gives you things like monthly change, whether or not, like I said, you know, if they're increasing or decreasing, it gives you kind of a percentage, a yearly change. You know, top destination sites, you know, where it's, you know, coming from.
Yeah. There's like analytical tools. Like I'm looking at referral analytics for David Walsh. You know, Google is his main refer, which makes sense. But the second one is called itdatabase.com, which I haven't even heard of before. I mean, and that's D-Zone is fourth, and D-Zone is a site that I thought was fairly big, and you links to David Walsh quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So
D-Zone's a social media site.
It's a social media site for developers. But I mean, I haven't even heard of this itdatabase.com, and that's crazy that they're, you know, according to this, the second leading refer to David Walsh's website.
So it's a good point. So, you know, it's not 100%. It's not like putting analytics on your own site and actually tracking. You don't actually know their numbers, but it's a fairly good guess. And if you're comparing, you know, yourself to them, it's probably going to be somewhat accurate if you've got, you know, a decent amount of traffic coming.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a great way to look at, you know, if you're already established in your field, looking at your competitors to see what they're doing. If you're thinking of going into a field to see, you know, kind of what they're doing, it's also got tools. So, I mean, you don't have to put in direct competitors. You can look at just generic industries to see the top sites in that industry. Industries are kind of vague. I was hoping for a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a quick way to see how large, you know, how large your competitors are and what kind of market you can look forward to.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Exactly. Compete.com, yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it's surprising what information you can just get, you know, out there.
Or if you're just curious about something, like how many users does Dig have a month? You know, yeah. Or someone like that. Just type it in.
Or like, you know, according to compete.com, they're the top websites on the internet. You know, it's like Google, Yahoo, Facebook.
Yeah.
Which is funny because there's two very sort of broad companies, Yahoo and Google, and then Facebook.
Facebook's like number four, I think, according to Alexa. So that about does it for compete.com.
Yeah, I mean, check it out. Go in and put some addresses and tweak it out. I mean, I'm not trying to question their methods. I just haven't really looked at it enough to say how 100% accurate it is, but it's a really good comparative tool. You know, even though it might say, you know, David Walsh had X visitors, that might not be accurate. That's okay. But they're getting their numbers the same way, so it's a good way to see the difference between people. Yeah, exactly.
I always forget the term. Is it accurate or precise? But it. Do you remember which one it is? It might not be accurate, but as long as it's
one of those two. I always think of it in firearm terms because
that's always the demonstration, you know, they give, whether you, yeah.
Yeah, accuracy is a good grouping. Precision is near the center.
Mm-hmm.
So I think precision would mean what is actually happening, but accuracy would be good for comparisons, which is what you used to like cite in your firearm.
All right, so the next web app we've got.
Firearm moment
is over. Dataopedia. So go ahead.
Well, so Dataopedia is it's kind of like compete.com, except for it aggregates a bunch of different information, including compete.com, to tell you information about a website.
So for example, I just put in, you know, a URL. It gives me a Google PageRank, which you would have to go search out or install the Google toolbar.
Yeah.
If you want to.
If you don't
do
the Google toolbar, getting your PageRank is kind of a goofy thing. There's a ton of websites out there that say, put in your URL and get your Google PageRank, but half of them don't work or I've found it to be slightly shady. This is really nice. I like this.
Well, the official way to get your PageRank is to install the Google toolbar. And I think they use some methods to kind of I don't know what they do to get it, but
they do
some things to get it. Anyways, so there's the Google PageRank. You've got Alexa traffic. Alexa is kind of like a web tracker to see. Would you say it's the top kind of?
It was top dog a long time ago. I remember it always had some controversy to it because for the longest time, the only way Alexa got information about the sites people were visiting were people who voluntarily installed an Internet Explorer toolbar.
Mm. I think they're getting traffic multiple different ways now, but anyways, they're an aggregator of data. They find out, you know, what the top sites are.
Yeah, there was a time when Alexa was the resource to see how your website ranked versus others.
They basically they've got our scoring system, 1 to infinity.
Yeah, exactly.
And it gives that rank here. So this particular URL is 334,490. Mm-hmm. Other things is like most visited countries, and then you can also click on them and drill down. It gives you graphs, you know, on Alexa, so you can see a history. It also has a compete.com graph. So not only does it aggregate and, you know, pull information from compete.com, you're getting multiple sources. So you're getting Alexa and Compete, as well as some other sources. In the top countries, it gives you what percentage of page views that rank in that country, the percentage of users, you know, a one-month average, 3-month average, and a 3-month change. So you're seeing a lot of different data aggregation. You're seeing kind of a whole picture.
What I really like about it is there's a popularity section where it tells you things like your pages referenced in Yahoo Answers, results in Reddit and Dig. which is really cool. I mean, I would never even think to look for something on Yahoo Answers, but
yeah. So
apparently,
like,
your page is in Yahoo Answers once, a page on MarkSanborn.net.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go look at that. So there you go. You get to see what people are saying about you sometimes. It's probably somebody using my website as a source. In this website, I'm seeing results from Reddit. So like I can see that somebody's been submitting at least 30 different URLs to Reddit that link back to my site.
Yep.
Or I mean this site. Let's see what some site that I typed in here. you know, you can put your site in and check it out. I definitely recommend doing that. 22 on Dig. We've got, oh, it shows Twitter. So if somebody says your URL on Twitter in any different way, it also, now this was interesting.
It snags who is.
Well, no. Oh, yeah.
Did you see that? That's really cool.
This, I kind of thought, this is kind of cool, though. It's actually, and I'm not sure how it does this, but it like looks through bit.ly and short URLs. It'll even post those from Twitter. So I can see that there was 8 people shared this bit.ly URL.
That's cool.
And I'm not sure if it's because the URL was in the Twitter tweet, and then the URL was at the end, or how it got that, but that's kind of cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah, who is information, you know? Normally you have to go type in Google, you know, you go to Google and type in who is, and you go to like Network Solutions or one of those sites.
They've got
and
like
type
a terrible CAPTCHA that's like a pain. I agree, yeah.
But why not, if you're looking, if you want to know everything there is to know about that URL, pretty much, this is it.
Yeah, that's a great
You get the who is, you get the compete, you get the Alexa, you get the country information, all the stuff that we're talking about. If a company has multiple domains listed under one registrant, it'll kind of detect that, and it'll say that this company owns these other domains.
Mm-hmm.
Comments. I'm not sure how, you know, if this is. Oh, okay.
It uses discuss, which is sort of
so
like.
So you can leave comments on this URL. Is that what? Okay. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, discuss is kind of like a.
I've seen it on a few blogs.
Yeah, it's like a unified commenting service. Almost like it's like so you can comment on content no matter where it is and what it is if they enable discuss, and it doesn't require, you know, it has like a unified login. I think it uses OpenAI. Anyways, yeah. So you can leave comments on it about it with discuss. That's really cool. It's a lot of information here.
Yeah.
Useful information. Again, you can compare here, you can't compare competitors, but you can compare traffic and like ranking services like Alexa versus Google PageRank versus, you know, all another web that we're going to talk about, compete.com's in there, you know. Pretty cool.
You can, this, I don't know how I feel about this, you can tweet to their Twitter name with the URL and it'll tweet back to you a bunch of information.
Really?
Or just a link to the info. I don't know how helpful that is, but that's cool, I guess. There's a Firefox add-on. They've got a search box so you can add. So
that's handy.
A bookmarklet.
Very cool.
An API.
And then, of course, you can break them down into different chunks to get more
it seems like,
detail about it if you want.
It seems like a lot of these web apps that we talk about have APIs now. It kind of like when we first started talking about web apps, it's like, oh, they got an API. And it was like exciting. And now it's like, well, they all have APIs.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I like that.
It's almost required now. It's, you have to allow other people to share and use your information, which makes it difficult to monetize. I mean, it's a lot of people are betting their money on.
Because then you use the site less.
Yeah. But if you use your API, you know, so like, for example, if we go to this, I can see the compete.com analysis. It's like almost like a little iframe, or you know, just an image with some information. But if I really want to get the full compete.com information, I have to click and see it, you know. I can see, you know, the top 5 tweets, but I have to go to Twitter if I want to see all the tweets, you know, to do a full search for, you know, the website I'm looking for.
Yeah, but I mean, for the API wise, if you had like a list of, you know, 100 competitors or something, you could be checking up on them all the time.
Yeah,
with ease, without having to go type in their URLs and things.
Yeah, now they just need to make an aggregator of this aggregator so that you can compete various things and have them. The ultimate mashup.
The ultimate mashup.
So that's Dataopedia. Very cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like a just mash all the other ones, compete and all the ones, and all in one, who is, and all in one spot. So,
yeah.
Dataopedia.
The next one we're going to talk about is actually yet another service that is aggregated by Dataopedia. It's called Quantcast.com.
Aggregated by? Did you mean by or like Dataopedia? It's like Dataopedia?
No, there is a Quantcast box in Dataopedia. If you
Okay.
It didn't work for me, so I didn't really discuss it. But... So what is Quantcast, Mark?
So the reason we're talking about yet another way to check up on a URL's information is that this one kind of has a little bit different take on it. And I'm not quite sure how they do it, but it's very interesting. So I typed in just, you know, we're doing a podcast. So I typed in twit.tv.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, a very large internet podcast. And it gives me demographic information. It gives me where the people are located at and all kinds of information. So it gives me a graph, you know, the daily unique visits. So that's just like compete.com or any of those.
Mm-hmm.
But here's some stuff that, you know, is kind of unique. 5%, you know, addicts. So this is kind of like frequency. Yeah. Are the people like coming back all the time, or are they just, they're leaving? So, you know, like passerbys. It tells, you know, if they're passerbys. I'm not sure how they do this, but it's like home users or business users. It says 77% are home users. It might do something, maybe like an ISP search or something. It gives information about where they put their advertising. So, and you can even, so yeah, like, so if you were kind of comparing this and you were looking into the industry, maybe ads placed in the lower right are better than like ads placed on the top for that serve, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking maybe like if it might be a country or cultural difference, you know, maybe some countries might think it's rude to see an ad by default, whereas, you know, in the United States, we're pretty immune to it because we get ads spit at us all the time. So I was thinking about that.
Yeah, a good one is the dig culture. They have a very specific user group and
very specific user group.
They've got to be very careful in how they place ads and where and what type of ads.
Yeah.
And so this kind of would tell you kind of that. So like I was talking a little bit about demographics. It tells things like household income, ethnicity, age, education. And I'm not sure if it kind of takes, if it does kind of keyword search things and then goes and pulls from government data sources and aggregates it, or how it does this, but it seems to be fairly accurate.
I don't know. So it says that they directly measure data from millions of web destinations controlled by our quantified publishers. So I don't know. It seems opt-in. But then again, how do you get this information? That information is not embedded in my browser.
No.
I mean, you know, is like Facebook a quant publisher? And then when people, you know, it does like a cookie matching and then can pull your information. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's either accurate and borderline privacy invading, or it's, you know, somewhat inaccurate. Either way, useful. I mean, like if you go to Dig, you can see that it's pretty spot on. There's only really big websites on here too. So, I mean, I can't even do like davidwalsh.name on here. I have to do like Dig or Hulu, you know. Big sites.
So like Twit, they're based in California. So like Los Angeles is their, I mean, if you look at the map, it's a lot of their users are in California. 95% are in United States. So it seems like they're not quite very international. Lifestyle. This is an interesting tab. It gives affinity of like categories of technology. Science, you know, a little bit kind of about what these, what types of people these are that are searching this. So it kind of really helps. Cool. I mean, this is where I guess the best way is primary research. You go out and do surveys yourself. You, you know, you might send a survey out to your existing customers or bloggers, or, you know, check your own analytics. But if you want an industry, generalized data, this is really easy. Just type in a URL and check it out.
Yeah, it's got really cool things. Like you, at the top, you can go to the different sort of chunks. And like one that's really interesting is demographics. Like I'm on, you know, dig.com, 64% male. That makes sense. There's a lot of males on Dig. Young adults, same thing. And then it's funny. I was looking at this before. It said Asian. It's an Asian demographic. And I thought, well, that's weird because it shows that there's a lot of Caucasians on Dig. But what they're saying is there are more Asian visitors here than average. So, you know, average sites like this, Digg is getting a lot more Asian visitors than other websites like it. A lot of the people that are visiting Digg have no kids in their household. They're, you know, less affluent. You know, they don't have a whole lot of money, you know, zero to 30,000 a year income. A lot of college graduates, people have high school and college degrees that are going to Digg. Makes sense. I'd say it's pretty accurate.
I clicked on their privacy tab, and it does look like they're using some sort of cookie system to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, which makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. If you're a publisher and you sign up for it, then people coming to your site, I'm assuming if they accept the terms of service in there, there's probably a little thing that says, hey, just so you know. But it's good. It's a good company. You know, you can get information for free. You can pay for an account and get, you know, a lot more information if you want. So
pretty cool.
It's impressive.
Like all of these apps that we've kind of been talking about, they may not be 100%. So you might want to take this and combine it with some, a little bit of your own primary research, your own surveys, your own analytics. I mean, your analytics gives geographic information and some things too.
Yeah, I mean, so the only
kind of combine them.
The only information that you have that you know is 100% accurate is your own, that is at your website.
Right.
But these are good comparative tools. I mean, go compare yourself to other people, see what's happening. Don't, you know, I mean, I wouldn't, like I said, I wouldn't, I might not use these numbers in a research paper. I might not.
No.
You know, I might not, you know, get to a fight to the death with someone if they say these numbers are inaccurate, because that's the nature of statistics. In a lot of these. So you never know. But it's good outside information that you wouldn't get otherwise, you know, unless you are doing corporate espionage and sneaking into their analytics. So
that was Quantcast.
That was Quantcast. Okay, so those are really good sort of research tools for what we want to talk about now, which is target markets.
So what exactly is a target market for somebody that's never done, you know, any market research or any of that kind of stuff?
And go ahead. I mean, it's a very ambiguous term. It's kind of hard to define. But so, you know, entrepreneur.com defines it as, you know, your target customers are those who are most likely to buy from you.
Okay.
Okay.
That seems fair enough.
Exactly.
Why would I want that, I guess?
Well, so what you... When marketing is a term that gets screwed up a lot, when people say marketing, they tend to just think promotion, things like advertisements and whatnot. But marketing really involves everything. It involves your product. It involves your distribution. It involves your promotion. What is it? It's like the four P's of marketing, promotion.
Oh, man. I know exactly what you're talking about, too.
Four P's. You should look it up here while I'm talking. But it involves a lot more than just promotion. We tend to think of promotion so when you say target market, people just think like, okay, well, I only want to advertise on sites that have this. But even your product is part of this. And so what you want to do is you want to focus your product or your service, you know, your marketing, which includes your product and distribution, you want to focus it on the people that are most likely to buy your product. And so like with a lot of target markets, what you kind of think of is you want two things. You want like your primary and your secondary target market, because they do bleed over a lot.
Mm-hmm. The four P's of marketing is called the marketing mix, and it's product, price, place, and promotion.
I forgot price. Place is distribution. Same thing, you know, distribution.
And then they've kind of got a Venn diagram in this article, and in the middle of all of these, the intersecting join of all of these is the target market.
Yep. So you need to focus. Obviously, you need to focus on the people that are most likely to buy from you, because if you're focusing your product on...
Well, let's say you've got an ad and your feminine hygiene ad comes up, and as a male, I'm never going to buy this. Why should I listen to this ad? You know, why? Yeah. They should not target me, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. You probably shouldn't have ads like that on ESPN radio, because.
Yeah. I mean, if ESPN radio is predominantly male, or like Digg, 69%?
Yeah. So it's mid-60s.
There's still females there, but you want to advertise to the people that are most likely going to buy. And
yeah, so you want to make your overall marketing the most effective, because that's the way you increase your margins and get more profit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what good is your target market? Well, I mean, you have to think about it in that individuals purchase for three reasons: to satisfy basic needs, to solve problems, or to make themselves feel better. Now, businesses purchase to increase revenue, to maintain the status quo, or to decrease expenses. And you need to ask, is my product, you know, my marketing, is it doing that and communicating that effectively? One of those, one or two of those things.
Well, maybe the first step is to, are you going to sell to businesses or consumers mainly?
Exactly.
That might, that some people that's a might big, not that's a, be, they might not have that question answered yet.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, who is your customer and who is your end user? So let's say if I'm selling parts to a computer store, my customer is computer manufacturers, which is a business. I need to focus on how I can help them increase revenue, you know, give them, you know, equipment for the same price or to decrease their expenses. But you know, if I'm focusing on my promotion on my end user, it's not gonna do me any good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're targeting to an individual, we want to satisfy their needs, we want to solve their problems and make them feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So in Nick's Tutor, I solve problems.
Exactly. Where, let's say with Montana Frag Fest, I try to help people feel better through humor and their outside activities, you know.
Relating to their maybe experience. I know you talk a lot about how you interact with the game as you're playing it. Not just the game itself, but how the person interacts, and then mm-hmm. they might kind of share that experience and make them feel better.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you find your target market? And this is really the key to this whole talk, right?
Right. And yeah, this is the key. We have all these apps, and we mm-hmm. can. This is a little bit, but you know, how do we do it? What's the first thing we should probably look at?
Well, I think a great way to start to find your taco market,
your target market
is use what we call a SWOT analysis. And what a SWOT analysis?
Whoa, is. Throwing business terms.
Hey,
here.
Hey.
What's a SWOT analysis?
Well, a SWOT analysis is a really basic tool. It's funny. It sounds much more complicated than it is. It's analysis of your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities, and your threats. Hence the SWOT, SWOT.
So, okay. So that sounds pretty simple.
Okay. Well, it is and it isn't. So strengths and weaknesses are always internal. Things internal to your organization or your product or your company.
Okay.
Opportunities and threats are external. So, you know, strengths are would be something like, you know, we're well ahead of our, you know, we're extremely innovative or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A weakness would be poor time management, you know.
SWOT analysis is something that they teach you in business school, like right off the bat, business 101. It's one of the first things they teach it, really.
Yeah.
So the strengths, you know, what advantages do I have? Mm-hmm. What advantages do my company have? You gave an examples, you know, you might be innovative. You might be the first to the market.
Mm-hmm.
You might be, you might have economies of scale, you know, cause you're, like, let's say, Google has economies of scale on their search engine.
Yep, exactly.
They've got so many servers, so many people using their servers and things that they can, make it cheaper, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yep.
Why do customers say they do enjoy business with you? You know, Apple's got a very good community. They've got a very strong strength in their community.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Weaknesses are, you know, sort of the opposite. What are things that I'm not strong in? What are things that I, you know, my deficiencies?
What can be improved?
Yeah, what can be improved?
What do you do poorly? It's a tough question to ask, but it's something that you need to really look in. There's something that you do less than your strength, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Always.
I mean, no one want to call perfect. It a weakness, but there's... Well,
weakness isn't exactly a poor term. You can't fix something until you know the problem in the first place. So, I mean, I detest people that think they do everything perfectly. I really appreciate someone that can tell you when they know... You know, it's when you look at a job interview, a person that doesn't, I think you can't ask that question anymore. What are your weaknesses or something? There's weird things with that. But I like someone that will look at me and say, Well, I know I'm, you know, for a great example is me. I really don't have very good time management, but I'm constantly working on that. I'm aware of it. You know, being aware of your weaknesses is better than having them and not knowing them, you know, and well, not somebody, realizing
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Knowing them and saying I'm working on it is much better than saying I'm lazy or something, you know, and I, that's just the way I am. I'm bred that way.
Okay, so moving on. Opportunities are external things external to your organization that are opportunities for you to move into. It's a pretty ambiguous term, but you know, let's say you're a web development firm, and you know, you an opportunity comes around for. Let's say you do, you know, websites for companies just as a web presence, but then you notice that, you know, you can see that there's a lot of companies that need internal organizational web apps. That's an opportunity if you're not doing that. You know, it's an external factor.
If it's an up and coming trend that you might see using something like Google keywords or something like that, you know, and there's a huge amount of people requesting something that doesn't yet exist, you know, that's an opportunity.
Yeah. Threats are the same, you know, if you competitors moving into your market,
one of them is barriers to entry.
Barriers like to entry. Exactly.
If you wanted to start an airplane service, you know, good luck.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot.
If you want to start a web development, company, no problem. It's easy. You know, there's a difference there.
A saturated market is a threat as well.
Saturated. Yes, it is.
So the whole point of this is that you know you want to cater your target market to your strengths. You don't want to pick a target market that works better with your weaknesses than your strengths. And you want to look at things like your strengths and your opportunities. You want to use your strengths to leverage opportunities, and you want to try and take your weaknesses and turn them into strengths. And
so another here's a good example of threat. I'm looking here. It says changing technology threatening your position in the market. Right now, the newspapers are getting threatened by the internet as, you know, the infrastructure of the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, infrastructure exactly. Is one of the leading causes for businesses to go under and new ones to come up.
Really?
You know, railroads came in.
That's true.
They could transport things, you know, then they had telephone, just made huge changes to everything. Then airplanes, they could fly. You know, infrastructure always changes technology.
And the internet is a huge infrastructure watershed. Huge.
So things get, people get rid of things like newspapers. They can see things on blogs. So,
yeah. So, I mean, you use that SWOT analysis to look at what your company's doing and try and use that to figure out, you know, it can go either way. You can look at your target market and try and develop strengths, or you can use your strengths to figure out who your target market already is. If you're like, okay, well, I thought my target market was this, but my strengths really, really are showing in this area. So that's actually really my target market, and I need to focus on them more. Another way, this is what we talked about with our webhosts a lot, to figure out your target market is using competitive intelligence. Mm-hmm. And there are two types of sort of competitive intelligence information, hard and soft data. Hard data is what we just talked about using all these web apps, except for the last one, which is like visitors, hard facts, visitors, facts and figures. You know, these are the hard numbers that, you know, that you're getting, and you can run analysis on them and things like that. Soft data is things like rumors, opinions, customer feedback, trends in the market, in Google.
Okay. Would psychographics fall under that term too?
Yes, absolutely. Psychographics, demographics, you know, demographics is kind of this weird one because it's like you can be like, oh, 65% of Dick's visitors are male, which is hard fact, but the demographic itself is kind of the squishy thing, like young males who are internet savvy.
Okay, I just realized maybe we should define what demographics. So demographics are like age, income, ethnicity, you know, stuff like that. Psychographics are you're a web developer, you're a NASCAR follower, you're a Dog the Bounty Hunter watcher.
Oh,
they
that's the best kind of psychographic.
There's generation, what do they call it? There's generation-based stuff like baby boomer versus whatever.
what is the millennials versus Generation X?
Yeah, Generation X and Y. And
okay, yep.
So
okay, so
I wanted to clear that up.
You know, I looked at my competitors using our web apps before, but now, you know, let's say, I mean, we talk about the internet a lot and we're doing, but you know, let's say I want to get, I'm starting a web development business locally. Where can I get some information about my area and like what's going on around?
Yeah. So you can do what's called like primary research. You can, you know, we talk about that. You can do surveys or whatnot. But some of the easiest data to get is data that's already been done. You just go and get it.
Exactly.
Now there's lots of paid services. There's ratings, Nielsen ratings, and all these different places you can get industry specific stuff. But there is a wealth of information from the government. They conduct all kinds of surveys and population things and data aggregation, all kinds of things.
The U.S. Census Bureau, man.
Yeah, and some of this stuff is quarterly, yearly, decade, you know, every 10 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But there's some really cool stuff. So the first one that we're going to talk about is the census data. This is really general information, but some of the information may shock you. You know, I just check it out. Like, okay, so
yeah,
so it's census.gov, and this is just, you know, Americans right now. It, you know, gives stuff like family size. You know, if you're making a product and you want to kind of know what's the average household size or how many people. What percentage of people are, you know, have a higher education, you know, mm-hmm. if they've graduated college, which is 27%, mm-hmm. by the way, you know, this is the place. It's very general knowledge, or I mean, general information. You're not going to, it might not be really specific to your product, but it's good mm-hmm. information to know.
This is great. So let's say I wanted to do like a web app to help renters or, you know, land property managers find renters.
That's a good example.
Looking here in Bozeman, Montana, you know, I focus a lot on sort of local web apps because I think, I think it's easier to do things locally and you can get, you know, easier to sell local advertisements. But mm-hmm. like here in Bozeman, it's fairly even between renters and buyers right now because of the huge, I mean, construction here in Bozeman was just booming. I mean, it was a much bigger bubble than the rest of the nation, I think. And that might not be a great web app because there's a lot of vacancies and a lot of people who own houses already, not a lot of people renting. But, you know, maybe the market's turning towards renters too with the, mm-hmm. you know, the recent mortgage crisis. So I don't know, but it's helpful information.
Yeah, with that one in mind, it says 67.3% are owner-occupied housing.
Yeah.
You know, renters is 32%. There's 11.6 vacant housing. So, mm-hmm. and, you know, like the other... tools that we've already talked about, that percentage, who cares? What does that mean? It's going up or down? Well, it actually will give you a history too. You can go look back in, you know, 2004 versus now and see is this trend, you know, trends.
Yeah.
Because we want to know where it's headed. We don't care where it's at now.
It's true. I mean, it's just the differences are pretty staggering. Like here in Bozeman, high school graduate or higher is 96.1% of the town versus 84% of the nation. Bachelor's degree or higher in Bozeman is 53%, where the nation is at 27%. I mean, that's a significant difference.
So, if you're doing local Bozeman-type web apps, you want to know, you want to have that data information that's specific to Bozeman versus...
Yeah, exactly. This is... very useful information. And again, the best part about it is that our tax dollars are paying for it, so it's your information too to use, you know?
Yep. So the census, they're all about how many people and what they're doing. The next one is the reference. So this is I was interested when I saw this. It says, so it's like the government data, they have RSS feeds. So mm-hmm. if you are an RSS junkie and you want to know what's going on tomorrow, you know, and get alerts constantly, there's just a whole list of stuff, labor statistics, copyright stuff, you know, what's Apple going to be copyrighting next or patenting, yeah. you know, yeah. you can set up a feed and get automatic alerts. You might get flooded with them. But
well, like one of the RSS feeds was business ownership that I'm looking at. And July 3rd, the Census Bureau published its first ever report on veteran entrepreneurs and their business. That's useful information. it's not useful to everybody, but it's good information to have in your head all the time, especially if you're trying to define your target market.
Sure. Yeah, labor statistics is a good one. You know, what jobs are trending, and that's actually one we're going to talk about, is the next one, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, or Bureau of Labor Statistics. this one was interesting here. Cell phone services has exceeded residential phone services. These are the consumer reports. This is the stock market, like, you know, every time they release one of these, it either goes up or down based on what jobs are increasing or decreasing and all that stuff. Like, this is a fairly frequent report. It's pretty much up to date. I think it's quarterly. It's definitely not like the census where it's every 10 years.
It's quarterly, it's interview survey. Yep.
It's a lot more frequent. So this gives information stuff like current, like this is very good for trends.
Yeah.
This is, you know, people obviously are dumping their regular landlines and going for cell phones.
Yep.
You know, we want to know that information. If we're not yet established and we're kind of making our product and we're trying to figure out our target market and we're finding that we're trying to make a landline-based service, we might want to not do that, you know? Or if we're already in the land phone line business, we might want to switch over or just try to bridge that gap.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an opportunity there. Maybe there's an opportunity in bridging, going from one to the other, going from land to...
I mean, Google or... What was it before Google Voice? What was it?
Google Voice is actually doing this.
Yeah, they saw the trend. They saw the trend of people dumping landlines and getting cell phones and thought, people are definitely having... It's not like it used to be the American family where there's a phone in the house. That's it. No, there's people with multiple phones everywhere, and it's a pain to manage those different kinds of phones.
Yeah, so they've got all kinds of information here. They've got from 1984 to 2007. They've got more up to date than that. But
again, great free information that is part of your tax. I wonder how much stuff we pay taxes on that we don't utilize enough of. This is a great. I've never looked at this before. I'm gonna be honest with you, and
I bet you could spend days looking at trends what people bought between, you know, 1984 versus 2007. It's changed. There wasn't cell phones, you know.
Yeah.
Not very many cell phones back in 84.
They were expensive.
They're very expensive. So, you know, hiring, all kinds of stuff. Occupation, information, population, residents, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's sort of two ways to define your target market. One is to look at what you're doing already and make sure that you are focusing on your target market. You know, one good thing I saw was that, you know, you may look at it and realize that the target market that you're actually shooting at might be 75 people that only spend $10 a year, you know?
Yeah.
That's not sustainable. Finding your target market isn't all of it either. I mean, it's, you know, but then you might say, okay, well, my little side thing is giving me a lot more money. Maybe I need to shift my focus towards my target marketing or towards my target market as opposed to, you know, and make the other one a secondary market.
Yeah, that was a good point you said with the niche that's too small. You could use like tools like Google Keyword and find out that there's not very many people searching for that keyword term. And also you could add the census trends and see, you know, like the land-based phone lines. It's obviously a declining market. You might want to check, you know, that niche and maybe expand on that.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I found out is a really big problem when people are defining their target market is you say, okay, so, I mean, who are the people you're trying to sell to? And this is especially on the internet. And you know what everyone says?
Everyone.
I want everyone's money. Well, that's great. I want everyone's money too. But that is not practical. You need to be really careful when you say that because about the only companies that can say that they're targeting everyone is people who are giving you the necessities of life, such as, you know, Coca-Cola. Grocers.
Pepsi, yeah. Coca-Cola.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you need to, you might overstretch yourself trying to go to everybody and wasting money, time, and you know, product and distribution by focusing on a target market of everybody when if you really narrowed it down, all that effort would be so much more concentrated and make people spend more money.
Yeah, definitely. Another one to find out, you know, whether people are spending money on that particular product, you know, like Pepsi, or whether they're spending their money on drinks or computers or whatever is the consumer expenditure reports. This is also another one that's, you know, very frequent. And it's going to tell you how much money people are spending on things exactly. like cell phones or, you know, computers or drinks mm-hmm. or housing, anything.
Yeah. I mean, if you're ending up, you know, if you focus on everybody as your target market, you know, you're not going to do like, you know, ads featuring women in bikinis, you know, to a senior center or things like that. You know, it's you're usually better off to try and focus on your target market because you can expand later. I mean, this is not, you're not chipping away into a stone tablet that's never going to change again. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of businesses start one way and then in an effort, because usually their target market is not a good one, you know, they branch out a little bit and then end up shifting that to their target market because they find out that's much more profitable.
So let's say we've got it pretty narrowed down. We think we've got our target market. We've used tools like keyword searching and census data, and we've kind of mapped it all together and said, I think I have a pretty good idea who my people are. What do I do then?
As we talked about above, it just kind of depends. Are you selling to consumers or are you selling to businesses? If you're selling to a business, you know, you could do sales calls. You could do online webinars. I've been watching some of those lately. And you can go to trade shows. But again, so like the key is these are all pretty generic ways to get a hold of your target market, depending, you know, but it does depend on your target market. If you do one of these generic ones, though, the one thing you have to do is you have to make sure you differentiate yourself. Tell your target market why you're focusing on them and why you're different than other people who are either focusing on that target market or bleeding into it a little bit. Let them know why you're better. Mm-hmm. And really shine, because you know, you've been to trade shows and it's like you just walk from booth to booth, and the only things that really catch your eyes are people doing stuff differently or people with a lot of energy that really capture your attention.
Yep. Something unique, something that really catches your eye. Maybe a demonstration or somebody that's very exciting.
Yeah. So and then depending upon your target market, there may be other small, you know, niche ways to communicate with them. If you're a very computer savvy market, you know, you can do a lot of social networking, things like that. That's getting into more the business to consumer.
So more retail.
Yeah, more retail, not, you know, selling to another business. You can do things like direct mail, email, social networking. You know, make sure your search engine optimization is good so that people search for you on the internet, they can find you. And then your traditional advertising outlets like radio, TV, print, or online. Mm-hmm. But then again, just look at ways, you know, once you define your target market, it's easier to figure out how to reach them. You don't have to do these sort of big shotgun methods of advertising, like putting an ad in a newspaper. You know, if you figure out that your target market has a local magazine that is, you know, for, let's say, local food growing, you know, if that's your then advertise in that. Don't advertise in the newspaper. You're going to pay more and you're not going to reach your people.
Mm-hmm. So for example, on my website, I don't really sell a product or service, but as soon as I find my target market, I'm going to write articles that might interest them so they keep coming back, because really that's my goal, so they keep coming back.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, what you have right now is, let's say with NixTutor, you don't have people that have been using Linux since 19, you know, you know,
some
when,
maybe,
it, when it first came out, some, but you know, I think with like NixTutor, your best bet would be to focus the new influx of people coming into Linux who are, you know, maybe scared of it. You know, maybe not, you know, system administrators, people who are going to be using it on the desktop. Okay, mm-hmm. That's a good target market. Secondary market, let's say people who are system administrators who are trying to save time.
Right.
There's your, you know, two target, your target market, you know, primary and secondary. So, you know, hit those people. Don't write about
like some advanced crazy kernel hacking.
Crazy stuff. You know, yeah, I mean, don't even mention compile, or if you do compile, put a big disclaimer that says, you only have to do this once. Don't be scared, you know, because that's your target market and mm-hmm. you need to speak to them.
Yep.
Whew. Oh man.
It's a big topic. So, you know, it's not very, you know, we're not talking about programming and web app Well, we had some web apps. We're not talking about like a lot of web technology. It's very businessy, but I think a lot of people need to really check out their, you know, sites and check out their, do a little bit of market research. It'll help you grow. So,
yeah, I mean, put a little effort into it. I know. I mean, what is it like? 80% of small or of startup businesses fail within the first 2 years. Small businesses fail in the first 2 years. And a lot of times I think it's because people aren't really doing the homework ahead of time. Things like finding your target market, you know, writing a good business plan, doing a SWOT analysis. I think the SWOT analysis is a great one because it seems so simple, but when you have to actually sit down and do it and write it on paper, it really makes you think about it, and you might see something that was glaring, you know, that everyone else kind of realized that you didn't, but no one was, you know, everyone was too afraid to tell you. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, sit down and I think do your homework. Even if you have an existing business, you know, again, it might be, you might need to refocus your efforts. So,
yeah, I would never just do a SWOT one time. I would do it periodically because things change. You're going to have new opportunities and new threats.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Oh, yeah, exactly.
The landline, I mean, you go back to beat a dead horse.
Newspapers have a SWOT analysis from 1975 that doesn't even include the internet, you know, I mean, and then they wonder why they failed. So, you know, do your homework and put time into your business besides just working. Remember, part of being an entrepreneur is that you are the mind behind the business, and you're, you know, a lot of times entrepreneurs just think that they, you know, people who start small businesses think that they're just another employee, but there's a whole lot that goes on behind the scenes that you need to do, and, you know, do your work and you'll be successful. All right, well, that wraps it up for this show of Face Off, or this episode of Face Off. I want to remind our listeners that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. If you want us to talk about a topic, or if you have a question, or if you want us to take a look at a web app, leave it there. Or if you have a follow-up to something that we talked about, leave it there. And we'd love to hear from you guys. So we'll see you next week.
See you guys.